From the Palmetto Swamps to the Piney Woods to the Oak Flats, you're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast.
You're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast, presented by Scree Gear, Performance Hunting Apparel, Performance Layering System. First of the year, well-stocked. Been telling you the last couple of weeks on the podcast, if you didn't get the Scree you wanted for Christmas, you can still use the code LABH for 20% off all regularly priced items on your first order at ScreeGear.com. We actually got a little cool weather here the last first week, not the last, but the first week of January, cold enough to use some of the new Guardian bib and jacket or ptarmigan pants, some of the cold weather gear that they've come out with this year. A lot of positive reviews about that for people all across the whitetail world. So follow them on social media, follow them on YouTube, find out more about the gear and shop online at ScreeGear.com. Second week of January, Kyler, and rutcation, so to speak, is kind of winding down, getting over with for everybody. Everybody getting back to the work thing. A lot of people have been hunting a whole lot. I know you have. How's it been for you the last week or so?
It's going great, man. It's the first week of January. You freaked me out there, man. I figured I'd miss some meetings.
Well, appointment. I guess you're right. It is still, as we're recording this, it's still the first week of January. But I guess in my mind, in my own personal schedule, I've got a lot going on the next few days, and really before it's going to be the second week of January before I get to hunt again. And I don't know. I guess my mind's just already kind of jumped forward. I kind of forget the fact that it's only Wednesday because I just got a busy week.
How's the new job?
Well,
day three.
So the new job really gets going tomorrow because I'm flying to the ATA show. Flying to Louisville, Kentucky tomorrow to be at the ATA show. And I'll be able to answer this a lot more probably on the next podcast because I have spent most of the time leading up and the last 3 days just, you know how it goes when you start something new? You try to prepare, but you never really can. You spend several days just organizing and not just physically organizing, but mentally organizing everything. So I don't know. I don't have an answer. I have a bad answer, which is I don't have an answer to your question. I don't really know yet. It seems kind of scattered. I've spent most of my time just getting prepared because with what I'm going to be doing, I'm going to have the opportunity to possibly pick up a lot of work over the next couple of days and what that's going to look like. So ask me again next week, and we'll see.
Okay. I'll ask you again in the second week of January.
And when it's actually the second week of January.
Yes, the actual second week, yeah. Well, so the first week of January has been going pretty well. It kind of slowed down a little bit in the deer woods. I've been hunting a good bit at the camp. I've got Randy Ketchot and Ronnie Dugas sitting here with me, and we're at the campfire. We are smoking cigars, drinking whiskey. We just ate steaks and potatoes, which is about the 11th day in a row that I've eaten a steak at the camp. And we're just trying to kill deer, man, just on the same regimen from when you and Colin were here. And it's only gotten better.
Well, that's
pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that for your sake, because I got to be honest with you, man. I did some holiday stuff, New Year stuff with my family, and I took my immediate family, my wife and kids. We went down to New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl on New Year's Day, and I thought, when we come back from the Sugar Bowl New Year's night, you know, the weather's going to start getting cool on Sunday. I'm going to have some free time starting up, but I'm starting a new job, which actually gives me more freedom, ironically. And I hunted Sunday afternoon and Monday, and I was just done. I just Like my hunting has not been good. I haven't seen much for deer the end of last week or the beginning of this week. And yesterday and today, I just was like, yeah, I'm not. Maybe when I get back from this trip to the ATA, maybe I'll go somewhere else, or maybe some camera activity or some scouting I can do when I get back. Maybe give me some more motivation or reason. But right now, man, it's the part of where I'm at in East Feliciana, it is slow, slow, slow. And I don't know if it's – there's always a peak and valley sort of kind of, if you were to graph it, sort of trajectory with the rut. It comes and goes. It's never to me, at least what I've experienced in my time in this area, which is not a long time. I've lived here for 8 years. I've really hunted around here a lot, probably the last five or six. It always seems like it's just one or two days, and then it tails off, and then it comes back, it tails off, and comes back. So I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic that middle of January may get some more activity, especially if the weather gets good again, but I hadn't had much to talk about, to be honest with you.
Gotcha. Well, I got a good story for you if you want to hear it.
Go for it.
So I've got this area that I've been, you could say, saving all season. I killed a really good buck off of it last year, hunting from the ground. And then I know it's got good deer on it, but I didn't want to go in and booger it up until it was rut. And so I've been running cameras on it for a while, honestly, since the beginning of October. And what was odd was it's one of the few places I've ever seen where there was, like, October 1st, there was community scrapes. And those scrapes stayed active almost all season so far. And I went and hunted it two or three times last week. And then on Saturday, we had the series of south winds, and it was forcing me to hunt the north side of the thicket. Thicket runs east to west along the slough. There's no water in the slough because it's been so dry. And I've been hunting the north side of it on a south wind, not really where I wanted to be. So the story starts off with I was near the X, but not on the X. And I was near the X for two hunts. And after the second hunt, I climbed down and moved. What happened was I was seeing deer, but they were all about 75 yards to my left, to the east. And it was about 11 o'clock on, I think it was Friday. Yeah, it was last Friday, 11 o'clock in the morning. Hadn't seen much. I saw two deer at first light, and then it was pretty much dead all day. And 11 o'clock, I saw a really good buck at about 75, 80 yards to my left. And so I get my grunt call out. I'm like, you know, practically it's windy, so I'm playing the flute to it, pretty much trying to get his attention. Get this buck, looking at him through my binoculars. And as I'm grunting at him, I see a set of antlers in between me and that buck enter my field of view of my binoculars, running at me. And it's a smaller buck, but still a good shooter, 8 point. And he's coming over to kick my ass, pretty much. He's pissed off and running right at me because I'm just like blowing this. It doesn't even sound like a grunt call anymore. And I'm blowing it so hard. So he comes into about 40 yards, and then the wind's kind of quartering towards the deer. He gets in my wind and then throws his head up a couple times and does that real cautious where they high step and turn and take off type of thing. And then the other buck sees him, and they both run off. So right after that happens, like 11:20 at this point in time, I climb down, I move my stand 80 yards over there, and I'm planning on going back to camp, making lunch, coming back. And at 11:20, after I'm done setting up, one of my cameras goes off, and it's a different, totally different buck than those ones, and it's about 200 yards away. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll just sit all day because I had enough to eat for lunch. So I sat all day. I had two does come out that evening and not much action after that. Next day I go back and nothing happens all morning. No, I didn't spook anything out. My cameras are dead. I didn't see anything on stand, nothing. But I said, you know, I'm going to stick it out for the midday action. So, this is kind of weird, but I talk on the phone a lot on stand. I'll just talk quiet, let the people I'm on the phone with know that I'm deer hunting. But I don't have any problem talking on the phone while I'm on stand. It usually doesn't affect much, especially if you're close enough to hear me talk on the phone. I probably could have shot you by then anyway. And this is at 12:40 the next day. Hadn't seen a deer all day. And I'm on the phone with my business partner. I said, hey, Mark, I got to go by. Hang up. And there's a buck that somehow he had scooted by where my stand used to be. And he was about 100 yards from me through the trees. And I could see him walking away from me, almost straight away from me, crossing this big slough that's dry. And that morning, I had decided, this as a side note, I've kind of noticed that if you grunt at a deer in the open, he typically won't come in close enough to shoot if he can see where he thinks the sound came from. And I've had that happen a lot of times to me. And so a lot of times I won't grunt at a deer if he can stop, look at my direction, not see a deer, and then keep moving. He'll just be real skeptical. So on those days, if I'm going to grunt something in, they need to be able to put their eyes on some other deer or deer-shaped thing to want to come in and check it out. So I brought Montana decoy doe with me, one of the ones I brought to Oklahoma. And what I'll do is I'll kind of, I don't say hide it, but I'll put it in a bedded down position where it's not standing up real tall. It's real low to the ground, but it's also kind of in some brush behind some leaves or in a thicket to where a deer can't see like real clear. I'm not putting it out in front of me like you would in a field in Iowa or Illinois. Like if I'm going to grunt at you, I want you to see that decoy and then come into it. So this buck's walking away and I've got my decoy at the base of the tree, a little bit behind me. And I'm like, you know what? I look at the wind or check the wind and it's in my favor. I'm like, I'm going after it. There's literally, and that's what I said out loud. I'm like, actually verbatim what I said was F no, I'm going after you. It was actually what I said out loud to myself. I'd take my arrow out of the quiver, I mean, out of the rest, throw it in the quiver, lower my bow down, climb out of the tree, grab the decoy, and start walking towards this deer with the decoy just in front of me. Now, I'm not trying to, like, hide behind it or crouch down or anything. I'm just trying to essentially use this decoy to cover the noise and movement that I'm making to where, as he's looking at me through the trees from 100 yards, he sees the flash of a decoy, right, of a deer.
Right.
So I haven't told you this story yet.
No.
We hadn't really talked about this.
Nope.
So he sees me, turns, comes right back to me. I've got my binoculars. I'm looking at him. He's walking straight towards me, and then he'd quarter. Straight towards me, and he'd quarter. But he's real slowly kind of like high-stepping. You know how a big buck will, like, they can walk through, they can damn near walk through a pile of leaves and not make a sound. Mm-hmm. And he's real slowly high stepping towards me. And I had stopped behind palmetto bush. And when I saw he was coming towards me, I laid the decoy down and I was just kind of crouched down behind this palmetto bush. And I'm trying to anticipate how close he'll be when I'm ready to shoot him. So I'm like on the dial of my HHA, I'm turning it back and forth from 20 to 30 yards. And I'm like rationalizing both of them. This deer is walking at me. And finally, I was like, you know what? I'm going to shoot him at 30 yards. So I put it on 30. He starts quartering again, comes out behind the palmetto bush, and I shoot him from the ground 30 yards, shot him behind the shoulder. But since I was kind of knelt down shooting slightly up on him, I spined him. And by the way, shot him with a Grim Reaper. I switched. This is my first, not my first hunt, but my first deer with a Grim Reaper, the 2-inch whitetail special. Spined him. He dropped in his tracks, but he wasn't dead. And then the problem was my bag's in the tree. I don't have my knife on me or anything. I wasn't anticipating this, right? So he's flopping around. So I load another arrow and I shoot him again, but I didn't really get into, you know, the lungs or anything super lethal. He would have bled out from both of them, but I was trying to kill him more quickly. So go up to him, hold him by the antlers, pull out the arrow, launch it, put it in the bow again and shoot him at 5 feet. And he died in a couple seconds, pretty, you know, double lunged him right there. But he's a drop tine with, and I'm trademarking this, an up tine. He's got a kicker in front of his brow. And he's an 11 point. He's got 6 on the right, 5 on the left. Both the kicker and the brow tine are at the bases of his right. And Ronnie scored him twice. The first time he scored him, 122. To which I was like, okay, but I don't think that's right. And he was like, yeah, I think I might have missed the measurement. And he scored him again the next day. And he came, when I got back from my hunt, he's like, yeah, it turns out I forgot to log the main beam. He's actually 143 3/4.
Yeah.
So he's my personal best. Finally got in, broke into the 140s. And did it on a, what I think is a badass story. And after our conversation last week about taxidermy, I decided to compromise and I skull mounted it.
You skull mounted it.
I didn't cut his skull plate off, but we did boil him and Ronnie power washed him today, and he's done. He's a cool deer, man.
Yeah,
I'm pretty excited about it.
You sent me a picture, but we haven't had any kind of lengthy conversation where I've heard any kind of the story. You just sent me a picture and it is really cool deer. It's those are my favorite kind. And I don't know if I've ever said this, if it's ever been brought up in any way on the podcast, but like my take on it when it comes to deer like that is when you kill a deer like that that's got so much unique character, it's by all, you know, you might as well just assume that it's a one of a kind. At least for you, it's a one of a kind. You know, you kill 143-inch 8-point, 9-point, 10-point typical frame, and if you hunt enough, chances are you get another shot at a similar rack. But those unique deer, I'm always kind of a sucker for them because I don't know. I just have this in my mind like that's a one of a kind.
He's the coolest deer I've ever killed. I didn't think he was the biggest for a while because he's only 16-inch spread, but he's got 6-inch bases on one side and 6 1/4 on the other, and he's got the most mass of any deer I've ever killed. Plus the kickers and drop time. He's just a cool buck, man. And I'm pumped about it because it's a good story. Probably should have mounted it, to be honest. Probably should have. But I just, when I start cleaning a deer, caping one out is like the last thing in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about it. Shooting them from the ground it must be what heroin feels like, I would imagine. Mm. It's got to be what super hard drugs is like, I would imagine. Because addictive.
I've shot deer from the ground out of a ground blind, but not like that. With a bow, anyway. I've stalked a deer with a gun like that, similar to that.
It was one of those game time decisions where I was like, he's walking away, the wind's blowing hard, it's in my favor, I've got the decoy. This is like 0.5 seconds of contemplation, and it's just like, we're doing this, go. And I mean, what happens if it doesn't work? He just runs off. He's already leaving anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was the coolest. That was one of the coolest, if not the coolest, deer kill stories that I've ever had. And it's just a cool buck, man. I'm pretty pumped about him.
You know, one thing that comes to mind. When you just the things that you just said, really just talking about the decision making process and the decision to go for it kind of thing, and like everybody knows that listens to this very much, I'm big into turkey hunting, and for the most part, I mean, there's obviously lots of ways you can hunt a turkey, but the common popular way to hunt a turkey is basically kind of like what you did with the deer. is
reaping.
Yeah, well, not so much creeping and reaping, but just this the strategic stalking and getting set up in a place where you can get a shot at the turkey, not just sitting still waiting on a turkey to walk by you. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's the whole aspect of crawling them and reaping them and all that kind of stuff, and that's kind of a whole nother thing. But you know, just simply hearing a turkey, locating a turkey. I mean, in the turkey world, you're hearing the bird and you're trying to locate him and get in range of him and get set up in the right place where you can call to the turkey. In your case, you're getting the deer's attention with a decoy. You may even do that with a turkey, and you're getting hidden and intercepting him somehow. There's more of a strategic type of hunt in that way, in that most people, that's their goal. They're not just going to go sit in a place and wait on a turkey to walk by the way we do deer hunting. Some people do that, but that's not your, you know, your common. That's not what makes turkey hunting popular. One of the things that I find that it kind of – it's an interesting parallel here. People that kill a lot of turkeys, so the thing about turkey hunting is that they can see so well and they're so wary and they're so unpredictable that it sometimes it's really hard when you're in their immediate vicinity to feel comfortable doing a whole lot because they can pick you off so easily. And there's no undo button with a turkey. As soon as he's spooked, that's it. You know, that's it. And but a lot the people that kill a lot of turkeys, they do like what you're talking about. And it's kind of one of those things where you have to have that mentality, just kind of paralleling it to the deer hunt strategy that way. What do you have to lose, right? Yeah. I mean, and sometimes, you know, calculated risk can really, really pay off. And, you know, that's paralleling like with turkey hunters, people that kill a lot of turkeys, they take a little bit of risk, you know? I mean, they're not going to kill the turkey where they're at. They got to make a move, right?
If this is what turkey hunting is like, I do not need to start.
No, would you just said it's a lot like it must be like what cocaine is or heroin or whatever you said? I was thinking, no, it's probably a whole lot like shooting a turkey in the face at 15 yards. It's probably what it's probably what it's more like. but anyway, but yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, I think we all get stuck in our, you know, like these preconceived notions and habits that we have. And we don't think outside the box, and we probably could be more successful. I mean, kudos to you for going that route because, to your point, you weren't going to kill him anyway. He was leaving, you know?
And not only that, but
you're hunting public ground. It's not like this is your deer and you know where he's fixing to go over there in bed and you just come hunt him the next day. There's no telling you. This is public ground, right?
Yeah, he had already walked out of my life. He was gone. He was damn near getting close to being out of rifle range by the time I saw him.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even want to say I didn't think about it. It was a very quick decision making of let's do this now or don't do it, you know?
Yeah.
And it just happened, man. It's one of those things where if this was the plan all along, like if I like was sitting at a bonfire right now telling my buddies like, hey, tomorrow I'm going to see a deer at a distance and I'm going to get close to it with a decoy and then I'm going to hide behind a bush and shoot it. I'd sound like an idiot, you know? Like
but that, you know what?
There's no way that would work.
The way I think about that too, though, is if it was your plan, you probably would have overthought something and it wouldn't have worked out.
Absolutely.
You would have overthought something and you would have did something a little bit different than what you actually did, you know, probably.
Yeah.
That's how things work for me normally.
Yeah, that's it. That's my cool story for the season.
It is a very cool story. It's a very cool story. Now you got to go back to work. Eventually.
Not really. I should probably should go back.
So we're going to, this is the coolest time of the year for a whole lot of people. I know people that I talk to, people in my close circle. We're talking to our good friend and returner to the podcast, Levi Madden. Our guests every week are brought to you by our friend Brian Chamberlain, the Chamberlain Lending Team with Movement Mortgage. And if you're in need of a residential loan, primary or secondary vacation investment, cash out, rate reduction, renovation for add-ons, any of these kind of needs, contact Brian. Nobody does better. Low credit scores, potentially 0% down, and the Movement Mortgage 42% of their profits go towards charitable organizations through the Movement Foundation, and that sets them apart. Brian is licensed in Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, NMLS number 114586, and Movement Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender, NMLS ID number 39179. Is with us. What's up, Levi?
What's up, boys? How are y'all?
I would say that Levi's kind of been here the whole time, but we had to mute him because we don't ever know what he's going to say, and we wanted to make sure Kyler got his story in. So,
well, what I'm not going to top that story. So,
well, so y'all what
should have saved him for last?
What I was alluding to when I introduced you, and one of the reasons that I thought about having you join us for this podcast is because you're a guy that has a tradition of a Rutcation style of holiday time away and spend a lot of time hunting. And usually that corresponds with a great time to hunt where you hunt on your property. And you've had some success, but it's just a awesome time of the year for people. Everybody I talk to, everybody loves hunting around the holidays in the South. And we're kind of on the tail end, even though I thought this was the second weekend or the second week of January, cause my calendar's all messed up, but we're at the tail end of that, you know, with ending the first week and all, but it's been good for you, right? Been another good Rutcation end of the year holidays?
Yeah, surprisingly, you know, I was talking to a little bit to y'all while I was over there hunting with the weather as bad as it was, but me and Kyle were both talking about it, and I was like, I did not see a lag in deer movement or numbers whatsoever. It was probably the best week that I've had this year as far as deer numbers seen, mature bucks seen, and all that. So,
and that's
really, really good.
And that's crazy because what you're saying has been echoed across the community, across
everywhere.
Social media, everybody in the South, across social media, Mississippi, Louisiana, both. You know, we went into the week of Christmas, and I think most people would be lying if they didn't admit to the fact that when they pulled up the forecast the week before, because, you know, the week of Christmas is often a holiday time where people take off and they look forward to hunting and the rut should be getting really good. You'd have to convince me you're not lying if you said you pulled your phone up on Thursday or Friday the week before the week of Christmas and you didn't just go, oh, my gosh. Are you freaking serious? Could it really be this bad? And yet, I mean, in some ways, just I can't say that I personally experienced, even though I did kill a deer the week of Christmas, but I killed the deer on the last day of cool weather we had before the heat wave hit. So I'm not exactly applicable to what I'm saying. But it's amazing to me because I just kept pulling up my phone and I kept getting messages from people and looking on social media, and it was just deer after deer. Trail cam picked after trail cam picked, reports after reports. They didn't miss a lick, man. They had to, I guess they had to carry around a lot of bottled water with them or something to keep from dehydrating.
It was 78 degrees when I shot my buck. It was 78
crazy,
degrees that
man.
Day. It was not during a cold front at all.
Just crazy. I can jump into the party in that. I finally I kind of like stuck to my guns, and I'm kind of a hardhead about when I hunt and how I hunt, and I don't hunt very much at all. And you know, if I'm invited to go with somebody and I'm going to experience a hunt somewhere else or spend time with a friend or something like that's one thing. But just hunting my spots, you know, where can kind of come and go whenever, I don't go into those spots until I want to go the right days. And I stuck it out for a long time going, I'm just not hunting in this. I'm not going into these spots and hunting in this. And I set it out and I set it out. And when I finally did, I saw two bucks chasing a doe, grunting and tearing it up, 75 degrees. You know, I mean, I didn't have that consistent.
That's crazy.
I didn't have the consistent success that you guys have. I didn't hunt as much as y'all did. But I did see some of it. And it's crazy to me. So I'm curious, you mentioned that you had a great week that, you know, you really didn't see a fall off. And you hunt in along the river, your area too, or is it area two that you're in? That part of the state, I mean, is everything? I mean, obviously the weather was different. Everything else, timing wise, what's been your experience with the rut this year?
The timing of the rut was pretty much right on cue. Normally, the best it really gets cranked up around the 15th of December, and right on through Christmas most of the time. And it was intense. I mean, I saw five or six different bucks snort wheeze within like a 4 or 5 day period, most of them being at least 3 years old or older. It was insane, actually. I probably had a better rut this year than I did last year, even though I didn't kill as good a quality deer this year, but it was really, really good.
Do you feel like, you're going to have like that second wave?
Yes. And that's one thing about our property too. I mean, we really go down to to January 31st, still seeing bucks chasing does over there. So, I really wish I could have been over there hunting beginning this week, obviously. Our neighbor killed a pretty nice deer over there. I guess it was Monday or Tuesday. So, I would say they're kind of getting, right now, they're somewhat, I guess you want to call it, lockdown phase. I started seeing that the last 3 days I hunted. You know, on our property, it's kind of, and maybe a lot of guys can speak for this that hunt private land, you start seeing a lot of smaller bucks out just kind of roaming around in random places. And no does, just all, you know, spike, 6-point, 4-point, just kind of roaming around, browsing, and not really, doesn't look like they're chasing or looking for does. They're just kind of, it seems like most of the does are kind of bedded up pretty tight, and that's kind of where we were getting at. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. That's the same exact thing I'm seeing. In fact, tonight, this afternoon, I got my first photo, a cell cam picture sent to me of two does back with two fawns on one place that I've got them. And so I'm not real in tune on how quickly they get back into their little doe group like that, but I mean, I know this is an area that's been rutting pretty hard, and this is a place where you'd see cell cam pictures of just like a fawn standing there by herself or itself. For the last 2 weeks, you just get a random fawn, and now they're back into, you know, two mature does or maybe a 1.5, 2.5 year old doe and a mature doe. And then this evening, starting to see them back with yearlings again.
Yeah.
Actually, this evening, I got a picture of two does together on my cell camera right before dark. I can't remember, but.
So
same thing.
I'm in East Feliciana Parish, and from what I've gathered over the years of being here, this place is apparently, or at least parts of it anyway, and that's Area 4. This place is known for having a very unpredictable and sporadic rut cycle. And I can attest to that because every year since I've had property here, I've had different peaks and valleys of the rut. I alluded to that earlier. But I've had it, you know, spike up the week after Thanksgiving, around Christmas, and then again late in the season, late January. But I saw something Monday, to y'all's points about the does, this is kind of really interesting. I hunted Monday, super cold, great day to hunt, and I saw a lot of deer, but I saw what I would say is like the best analogy or the best every phase of what we're talking about. So I saw a yearling by itself just roaming around that, if you made me guess, was obviously not used to not being with its mom. You know, it was back and forth aimlessly all over the place. That was early on. Really before the sun really, really got up early on. So it roams around aimlessly, and this is a spot that I see a lot of does and yearlings throughout the year, and I don't ever see yearlings by themselves. And so I feel pretty confident in saying this is a yearling whose mom's off with a buck somewhere, you know, in estrus. So that happens 7 o'clock, let's say 7 o'clock, something like that, early before the sun's real high. About 30 or 45 minutes later, from my northeast, a mature doe comes out of a thick area that the deer oftentimes come from, call it a bedding area. And I don't know how to best describe it, but the way she was moving, I stood up and grabbed my bow because I just was confident there was a buck coming behind her, following her. She was twitching her tail. She was, you know, just had that walk about her. And as it all played out, she walked right on past me. She cut across the flat I was hunting, and she was gone. Nothing happened. What I assume happened is she had been locked down with a buck in that thicket. There's very little doubt in my mind that she had been. And she came out, and he didn't. So then, fast forward an hour, and I see a group, two adult does with two yearlings, come through. So I basically saw all three things that you kind of see in the whole doe-yearling relationship thing. If you're using does and yearlings to try to figure out where they're at in their estrus cycle, I saw all three things in a three-hour period. So how in the hell am I supposed to know what's going on? You know what I mean?
You get it all in one right there.
I mean, imagine being a buck trying to figure it out.
Hey, if you're looking for a new piece of hunting property or you have a piece of property you'd like to list for sale, contact our friend Slade Priest, the hunting land man. Slade's a Realtree United Country Land Pro, and he's more than just a real estate agent. Slade has spent his entire life in the outdoors managing property, hunting, fishing, and he really prides himself on understanding putting the right buyer and the right seller together when it comes to outdoor recreational hunting property. And Slade was recently ranked number 2 in the country for 2020, Southern States Realty United Country Hunting Properties. So if you are in the market, no one sells more, Mississippi and Louisiana, and it's not too late to potentially get into a new piece of property even for this hunting season. Slade tells me you can get to closing pretty quickly, and he's got some fantastic properties recently listed and more coming all the time. So search the hashtag HuntingLandMan, and you'll find all kind of stuff. Slade's got a podcast where you can get all kind of information on land and the buying selling process. So check him out and go find all of his listings at huntinglandmanms.com.
You know, that's why they're all running around idiots.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why if I were a buck in my area, I would be dead because I would just be up all over. I'd be just trying to check all of them, I guess. Just trying to hope I finally found an eligible bachelorette, I guess.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that. They're not doing that. That's what I would be doing. But if I was a turkey, I'd be dead too because I'd just gobble all the time just to hear myself.
Hey, Levi, I've got a question for you. So the Mississippi River is pretty low this year, probably the lowest it's been in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
Do you think that has any impact on your property, even though you're outside the levee over there?
Yeah, it has a very positive impact if it'll stay low and not flood Davis Island. And I hope it doesn't. I think I checked it last week. It was at 20 feet at Vicksburg, so it's looking good so far anyways.
Yeah. So. You had told me in the past that even though it sounds – I think most people listening and most people that you would say this to would think that it would be a good thing if the river floods because you'd have – mm-hmm. more deer on your place, but you brought up a good point to me last time I was at your camp, and that's a bad thing because they're kind of like bad party guests. They come, they drink all your beer, they don't help you clean up, and then they leave. And then they eat all the food for your deer, and then your herd doesn't have a lot to eat anymore. And then I asked you, I was like, I asked you if you can tell a river deer from your deer. How do you tell them apart from your herd?
Typically the does, the groups of deer that come across, especially the does, will be grouped up in really, really big groups. And you'll just see them in a lot of random places, like walking down roads in the middle of the daytime, like just stuff you don't really see during, you know, when it's not flooded. Bucks too, you'll see them all out in food plots at weird times of the day. And, you know, when I say that, you know, they come on our property and eat everything, a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh, there's no way that. And I'm like, no, you don't really understand. You can sit in on a big food plot, and I'm not exaggerating, you can see 100 deer in an afternoon. It's unlike anything you've ever seen in your life. It's absolutely insane. And you can only imagine, you're sitting over there looking at a 3 to 5 acre food plot, and you can only imagine what the rest of the property looks like, because that's not all of them. So,
yeah, I've seen it. Not seen it often, but growing up on a river town in Mississippi and having family right there on the river property and stuff, I've seen it where they're just laying out in the backyard all day, you know. And it's one of those kind of things where it's cool to see it once, but if you have property and you give a crap what people do, because obviously people take advantage of the situation. And if you have property close to the river, and people around you are just really taking advantage of the situation, then you have an age structure problem for several years to come because of all of the deer that get shot and killed when they're bunched up. So the river's been bad to all the states that are affected by it for so many years. I'm really glad that we're finally having all of those areas are getting a break and having a good normal fall and winter year, at least so far.
Yeah, and if I remember right, in Louisiana, they did, you know, a couple of years ago, they actually tried to close the season.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, they kind of implemented like a barrier for the deer when they come across the river. You know, you can't be sitting. You know, they had people sitting up on the levee just shooting them as they come out of the water, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But they implemented some kind of barrier for them. I can't remember. It's a yardage amount, maybe like 500 yards or something like that, which is pretty good, I guess. Yeah. So
I've heard some horror stories. I mean, some absolute horror stories of people that, you know, property right on the bluff, right around the levees where, you know, that first entry point for them to get out of the bottoms that are flooded.
Mm-hmm.
And just day after day after day, just an onslaught. And, you know, if you've ever hunted around flooded areas, you know that the deer get pushed, but then they quickly stay. They just keep going back. They keep trying to go back, so they stay with the water or close to it. And so you can find them day after day after day. It's pretty rough, but so you alluded to the fact that you had some success, maybe not quite the quality, but you had a pretty special year last year, so you can't exactly compare, you know. I mean, you're not going to have a lot of years like you had last year, no matter what, but tell us a story or two about, I know you killed a couple bucks, tell us a story or two.
Probably the coolest story was probably the last one I killed. I was actually hunting in there where I took both of you in the same area, this little area called the Palmetto Ridge. There's a big flooded slough running up in between two very faint ridges up in our big woods back there. And, I was actually, Locke, you would know exactly where I was. I was in that split cypress tree that I was in when I was back there filming you.
Yeah.
And, that big 8 point that I was hoping one of y'all would kill, I saw him in there. Gosh, I think it was about a week before this hunt, and I actually saw him stand up out of his bed. He was probably 100 to 150 yards back to the east, which if the direction me and you were facing, that would have been to the left over there where it was kind of thick, kind of where your buck ran. And so I kind of waited for another wind to go in there and hunt him. I went in there and I actually saw that buck I killed it wasn't right in the exact same spot, but I saw one just kind of appear out of nowhere. I saw the top of his rack stand up, and it was kind of just a split second. I saw it stand up, and it kind of disappeared, and I was like, well, that's probably him. He stood up about 4 o'clock and went south down in that thick, you know, grown up stuff that I couldn't see him. He just basically disappeared. And anyways, it was probably about 4:45. There was a doe that had been down south of me blowing. And if I had to bet, there was probably a bear down there. And she was down there blowing 3 or 4 times. And I was like, well, this hunt's over. The deer's walked away from me. I'm not going to see him. So anyway, she came up from the south. It was the same doe because she kind of trotted up the slough real slow and, you know, looking around and nervous acting. And she walked literally right underneath me. And what made her do it, I wasn't moving or anything. She looked straight up at me and saw me kind of silhouetted up against the skyline and sat there and blew at me. She hopped off and blew 4 or 5 more times, just kind of, she didn't ever run off. It was kind of weird. She sat there and blew and just kind of walked around, you know, 30 or 40 yards from me right there. And I look up, and sure enough, that buck had come out down there probably 150 to 200 yards south of me. And he came right on a string at 10 yards, and I shot him right there, right where she was standing, sitting there blowing. It was the, just, you know, the craziest thing I've ever done.
But look, you know, go ahead, Kyle.
He came into her blowing, I mean.
He came into her, you know, I guess he saw her walking up, and she was sitting there blowing, and I don't know, like I texted you, Kyle, I was like, I guess he just wanted to die. I don't know what was going on.
Look, I can tell you a really crazy, cool story. So that I would have not thought this would have come up. I really didn't thought anything about it until you just told that story. Mm-hmm. So I told y'all I hunted one time when it was hot. I hunted a couple times when it was hot, but one of the hunts I made when it was hot, I saw the bucks chasing the doe, right? So I'm sitting there at 5 o'clock, and I can hear a deer kind of trotting, and I can hear a deer behind it at probably 200 yards grunting. And sure enough, the doe comes trotting past me. The wind is blowing completely the opposite direction, so nothing smells me or anything. The doe trots right past me, and there is 2 bucks behind it. They're about 100 yards behind and just grunting every step. And they come all the way by me. It's a small rack 8-point and a spike. And they're both grunting, and they come by. Well, when they got past me about 100 yards, she started blowing at them. And I've seen does do that before. When they don't want to be bred, or I don't know what they're doing, but they'll blow, and the bucks will just keep chasing them. And
I have seen that too.
And
I
so
will say that.
I'm in a little hardwood flat that's butted up to some like 6 or 7 year old pines, and they chased her in and out of the from the hardwoods to the pines behind me, and she blew and blew, and I mean I could hear her blowing, like, you know, I mean she would go from almost 180 degrees from behind me to my right to behind me to my left blowing, and I could hear them grunting and chasing her. It was kind of cool. Well, that went on for like 5 minutes, and she got directly to my right, which was to my east, and she was about 150 yards, and I could hear her blowing, and I could still hear one of the deer grunting, and another 8-point comes running from my directly to my left and runs right past me and runs right over there to her, and she's been blowing for 5 minutes. But it's like, I mean, obviously I knew what was going on. I could hear the deer grunting. I could tell it wasn't the same. That's the other thing I would say about it. Probably different from your situation. She was blowing, but if you really listen to it, it wasn't really the same as a doe that's blowing at you. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, she's blowing, and I guess just casually it kind of sounds the same, but when you really paid attention to it, it sounded a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, and but yeah, like to your point, I mean, this buck that came by me, and he was like a 3-year-old 8-point. He was, you know, a much older, not that 3 is old necessarily, but the ones that were chasing her were young bucks. Mm-hmm. He was a decent buck. I mean, he's a deer that I've been passing up hoping, you know, for him to be a shooter next year. Mm-hmm. And he came straight to her. So mm-hmm. I think they know. I mean, I think they kind of realized that. You ever thought about, like, you're not in the woods a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, deer blow at lots of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, what's our perception of that? I mean, I know we think when a doe blows, everything's blown. But, I mean, for all we know, there's a buck laying over there, and he's thinking she's blowing at a coyote, and an hour later he's just going to go on about his way anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I've seen them over there on our property blowing at bears before. You know, you see the bear, she throws a fit for, you know, a few minutes, blows, and kind of hops off out there 100 yards and basically just kind of just meanders off. So,
yeah,
I definitely agree with that point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, Levi, you how many bucks have you killed so far this season?
Three bucks.
Really? I thought it was two.
No, I killed another one. Actually, in the rain or in the light rain.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, I don't even remember what the date was. Maybe the 23rd or the 22nd, maybe somewhere in there. So, I was really worried about this year. I saw a deer die of EHD this summer, and some duck hunters were over there at our place, and they actually found another buck not too long ago out in a little place that floods out one of those CRP fields, and all the bones are still there. You know, it didn't look like anything had really touched it, so I kind of suspect he probably died from it too. And, you know, if you saw a deer die of EHD with your own two eyes, and then you go out there, you can only imagine how many are actually dying. I had two bucks last year that I was letting walk, and Locke will probably remember one of them. Locke, do you remember that really nice 9-point we saw mm-hmm. back there by that rice field?
Yep.
He was gone. I don't know what happened to him. He was gone, and that 10-point that was with him, both mm-hmm. of them, don't know what happened to them. Haven't had a picture of them all year. So
I actually it actually crossed my mind. I don't know. You and I were talking just about deer and stuff, just texting one day, and I actually kind of meant to ask about that deer because we saw him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. One of the times I was there with you, and we actually got to look at him pretty good. He walked down that levee one time, and mm-hmm. and we talked about him a good bit. And I actually was wondering, you know, because he was really nice as a younger deer last year and had a lot of potential. And I actually kind of in my mind had been meaning to ask. I hate to hear that.
Yeah, I think we lost him. I'll tell you another story, too. You remember that real nice 9-point you filmed back there the first morning you hunted?
Yeah.
Our neighbor had him again this year, and he was a little bit bigger, heavier, and our other neighbors we all three kind of corner back there together. Neighbor that hunts directly behind us, they strictly bow hunt. And he'd kind of put that deer on the don't shoot list. They'd been watching him all year. And the other neighbors beside us, the guy sent the rifle hunter, sent him a picture of the deer and was like, "Hey, please don't shoot this deer. We've been letting this deer walk all year." And lo and behold, they shot him that morning.
Yeah.
And he was a really, really nice deer. Probably, I don't even know if they scored him, but he was probably a four-year-old, probably scored in the 140s, probably, I'm guessing, maybe high 130s.
Yeah, that sucks. He was a really nice deer.
Yep.
Yeah, well,
part of it, you know, we don't, they're free range animals, so it's not like, you know, somebody else shoots him. It's trophies in the eye of the beholder, so.
Yeah, well, I got to personally watch that deer at 10 steps
mm-hmm.
multiple times that morning. And it's not hard for me to imagine how there's plenty of people out there that most places I would have shot him. So, yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. But yeah, to your point, it doesn't matter. I mean, neighbors are neighbors, no matter how, yep. You know, people are going to, everybody, always, and you're right. I mean, it's in the eye of the beholder. It's mm-hmm. just what it is.
Yep.
I'm kind of curious. You know, you obviously are, you guys are, have a lot of experience and done a lot with management. So it's something that you study and keep up with a lot. And, mm-hmm. and I know you have a lot of opinions about it and stuff like that. And, you know, trying to come from, you guys have, you know, obviously you have really good habitat and you mm-hmm. have an ability with good neighbors for the most part. Yep. Mm-hmm. To handle a lot of things and kind of keep a consistent structure in place, you know, okay, what doesn't exist everywhere.
What
are your opinions? Not just about the quality of deer. That's really not what I'm getting at. I mean, I don't. Mm-hmm. In terms of what I'm asking, it doesn't matter whether your trophy is just anything with, you know, with 8 points, or whether your trophy is 5 or older, but just generally speaking, do you feel like the predictability that you guys, that, I mean, that's a kind of a luxury that you have, along with having good habitat and good deer numbers and ability mm-hmm. to manage with your neighbors. One of the luxuries is you have a lot of predictability, and I think a lot of it is because you're in an area with a lot of private landowners that have like-mindedness and good habitat sure. and all that kind of stuff. Do you think mm-hmm. that, I mean, do you think the unpredictability of the rut in many other parts of the state has to do with the just generally the kind of scattered inconsistency of the deer density and population and geography?
Damn. Yes, yes. I mean, we do, even though we lost some deer this summer and just disappeared, I mean, we're still pretty dang fortunate that, you know, we don't have to pressure our deer a lot. We know kind of where to stay out of early in the season, so we pretty much have a pretty dang good idea where they're going to hole up, you know, especially the does right before the rut, you know, if that's what you want to kind of target. So we're in the very small percentage around the state that has the opportunity to do that, so
yeah,
not everybody has that opportunity.
I just wonder I look at like an area I'm in, and so one of the things, aside from any of the management and all of that kind of thing, mm-hmm. when you get into the area you're in, it's there's a lot more consistency in the geography,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you got large tracts of landowners, but you also have large tracts of land that are purpose land. They're farm mm-hmm. fields, they're ag fields. And then you have river bottom stuff that is not going to support the typical timber industry kind of stuff that you get in hillier country, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of is what it is. You can select cut some of it, but you're not going to wipe out flooded river bottom country and turn it into a pine forest. It just won't work. So yep. when you get into this part of the state and where I'm at and lots of other parts of the state, you have more fragmentation in terms of landowner. Mm-hmm. more smaller tracts. And with that, you have varying stages of landscape change. You mm-hmm. know, you have one private landowner over here that's got a couple thousand acres who has, you know, very limited timber harvest, and it's very structured, it's very select, and whatnot. Maybe there's agriculture there too. But then across the road, you've got 20 different landowners, and none of them have a plot bigger than 100 acres, and they're all at different ages of clear-cut pine reforestation,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, and so you just, to me, it's like a, I don't, I'm trying to think, I'm wanting to say checkerboard, but it's really not even checkerboard. It's more like a puzzle piece
mm-hmm.
of just different, you know, different, and so you've got pockets of land that present themselves to a deer herd completely different in the same yep. geographical region as another pocket of land.
Yep.
And then with the fragmentation, you also introduce a lot more diversity in the styles of hunting that's happening here and there and around the corner and down the street and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you get into that, that's why you guys can kind of you guys can kind of take a thumbtack and stick it on the calendar year after year and be pretty close to what's going on in terms of the phases of the rut and all that. But when you come to other parts of the state, it's more like throwing a dart at the calendar and hoping you hit in the right place. And it's really maddening for me because there are times where last year, I hunted with you a couple of times last year, and both of those times it was later in the season. It was around Christmas, and then again, like I think it was middle of January when we were doing the new Scree stuff. And both, I mean, but at both of those times, I had pretty much gotten to the point where I felt like the rut was gone for the most part, enough to even count on in my location. So I was going and hunting with lots of different people in lots of different places, just kind of seeking out different places where there was still some rut activity. And I left cameras all out in the woods, and I went back and pulled them all in February, only to find out there was like a 10-day period in January where there were bucks on their feet in the daylight all over my property, and I never stepped foot on it. You know, and but I would I didn't have cell cameras running last year, so I had no way to know it. And it's so maddening because even with the cell cams, there's and with other friends that hunt in the area and on my property and stuff too, it's like there are days where I look at the weather and I kind of try to analyze what I've seen and what people have told me they've been seeing. And I'm thinking there's nothing happening. And then somebody randomly goes hunting or I get some trail cam data or something. I'm like, yeah, I really probably should have been hunting yesterday. Just out of nowhere yesterday, it was just all over the place. And then it shuts right back down.
Yeah.
So the rutcation thing that I've kind of making the topic of this podcast, this episode, the rutcation thing is really hard for some of us in Louisiana.
It is. It is. And, you know, I'm pretty confident to say that our buck to doe ratio is really probably pretty close to right. You know, if you're kind of in the heat of the rut and you see maybe not just one specific spot because it can happen at random, but you know, if you go bounce around your property at a few different places and you're seeing one buck being chased by three or four or one doe being chased by three or four bucks, it's a pretty good indicator that, you know, there's your buck, you got a few more bucks on your property than probably does. And there's not a lot of places in Louisiana that are like that. And, you know, the older mature deer, in my opinion, a lot of people think that, you know, the bucks just get stupid and run around and act crazy. But, you know, those real old 7 or 8 year old does, you know, even though that they go into, they may go into estrus, they may be not going into estrus at all at that age, but they're still really smart, and they do find places like on our property to hole up, and it's damn near impossible to get in there and hunt them just because of where they're at. It may be, you know, a little spot out in the CRP. It may be a little 5 or 10 acre little block of nothing but sawbriars out there, and they just kind of stay out there. And you know, the older bucks have been around there a while. They know where they're going to be. I mean, it's like you walking in your house and knowing where your socks and your underwear are. And I mean, they know those woods better than you ever will. So it's it's cool. You know,
it's a puzzle.
It is
very much a puzzle.
It is. It still is, even on our property. I mean, we've got we got 3 or 4 deer that we've been, I'd say, trying to kill that are out in those CRP fields. And some of the areas are huntable up in trees and some of them aren't, but they're still freaking hard to kill, even though, you know, the great property we hunt, they're still wild animals. So,
you know,
still not easy.
I mentioned on the podcast last week about the deer that my son's been hunting near our house. And I actually told you this, we were talking on the phone. I've come to the conclusion. Now the deer has kind of disappeared over the last two or three days. I haven't gotten any pictures of him, but from about December 22nd till about January the 2nd, January 1st, January 2nd,
mm-hmm.
he basically was about as common as my dog is on the back porch. He was there all the time. Like, I mean, I literally was taking 20 or 30 pictures of him a day, and mm-hmm. my son had never seen him, and he had hunted basically, I don't know, probably made 12 or 13 sits in the stand during his time off from school. Now he's back at school this week, but I made the comment to you that I'm not really so sure. I've kind of decided that the deer must be bedding somewhere where he can see him going into that stand.
Yep.
Because there's really no other explanation for a deer being, I'm talking about all hours of the day and night, and I'm talking about more than ample daylight type of opportunity, and never has never laid eyes on him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, I think that probably happens to us. I'm using that to kind of segue into the point that, we all rely on trail cameras a lot, and I think to kind of make our strategy and decide where we hunt. And I think one of the things that's like kind of the low hanging fruit, easy thing to do, is to say, I've got pictures of this deer here all the time. I need to get in that stand. Well, if he's literally, when you say all the time, if all the time is like literally all the time, he's probably bedding really close.
Very
and that's
much
probably
so.
Not, wherever that camera is probably not where you're going to kill him.
Probably not.
Because there's probably no way to kill him there. And I don't care if he's rutting or not.
Yep.
You know, they're stupid during the rut, but they're not that stupid. If they're bedding and living in one hardwood bottom and they can see the whole bottom and they know every time you come in there, you're not going to kill him. I don't care how much you got him on camera.
That's true. Yep.
Yeah. It's,
I think people get too reliant on their cameras sometimes. That our other property down the road that we hunt that's actually separate from our main camp, cell phone cameras don't really work on it. The service is, for whatever reason, the service is horrible for cell phone cameras on it, which is, I actually kind of like it. It keeps me out of, there's a few areas on that property that I literally just don't go on just because I just want, like we talked about earlier, just kind of leave it alone and wait for the right time to go in there. And, I don't think I ever took both of y'all in there, but there's a road right off the main highway down the middle of the property. And there's a place right there that those deer just lay up right there in plain sight off the road. And it's kind of crazy, but they'll lay up right off the road and you can drive right by them and they will not move. And if you stop, you can't see them, but as soon as you stop and sit there for 5-10 seconds, they all get up and just tear out of there. It's crazy. And if you go in there and hunt and walk in from that direction, morning or afternoon, you're going to blow them out. I went in there and actually came in on the back side of them over the break and saw one shooter in there with a doe. He was within 100 yards of me all morning with the doe, snort wheezing and running bucks off. And I don't know if I sent y'all a picture. I passed up a hammer 3-year-old in there he is going to be a stud next year if he makes it. Hopefully nobody shoots him. So, but.
Well, it's been an interesting year. I'm happy that everybody had such, you know, good success throughout the holidays, throughout this time of the year. It always seems to be the preferred and favorite time for so many people to hunt, but I really hope we don't do this again. Like, I don't like 80-degree Christmas.
Yeah. No, it is miserable. I agree with that.
Are the sloughs on your property, are they full, are they dry, or half
it's
full?
It's very, very dry right now over there. Same thing with you. That slough where I killed that buck that I told y'all about earlier, it's bone dry. Y'all remember y'all remember driving across those flooded breaks where the rock roads were? All right, that second one where the food plot is in between the two breaks, that's actually Mounds Bayou that runs down beside right there, and you can literally cross that thing in shin high rubber boots right now. It's incredibly dry.
Yeah, I don't. That's a warm fall and really dry weather. I don't know what I think about that in terms of what that's going to look like in a year or two. What kind of effect that's going to have? Obviously, I don't study this stuff that much, but I don't think that's very good for the prospects of any kind of EHD or blue tongue or any of that kind of stuff.
You know, we actually had a really wet spring and early summer over there. It was actually really wet leading up to early season. And I actually talked to a biologist. He actually works for Louisiana Wildlife and Fisheries. And he had seen a lot of EHD this summer, too. And it really surprised him that as wet as our spring was, that he had that many encounters with it this summer. And when I called him and told him, I was like, look, I think I got one out here on my property that's, you know, wandering around. I'm sitting here 80 yards from him talking on the phone. He's just out there walking around in circles. And he said, yeah, that's exactly what it is. So,
yeah. I saw a news clipping the other day. I think it was in right across the river from you. What county is in Mississippi right across from you around Vicksburg? What county is that?
You would have to know.
I can't remember.
I have absolutely no idea.
I may be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure it was whatever county Vicksburg, Mississippi is. So pretty much right across the river, just north of the Tensaw area, that part of Louisiana, straight across the river. They had a pretty large... I mean, the picture's actually just weird looking because the deer has got really big horns, and you can tell it's a mature deer, but at the same time, it's shriveled up, and, you know, they found it was dead and tested positive, and that was like a week or two ago. So, but
that was CWD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we haven't had a CWD, to my knowledge, and I may get corrected by this, but I don't think still that Louisiana has had a positive case of CWD, I don't think. I think the Louisiana Wildlife and Fisheries, because I've actually seen it, they had a chart, I think it was on their website, of a certain amount of tests that they've done on deer. And we didn't do it this year, but last year, every deer we were killing, we were, you know, cutting the jawbones out for DMAP and all that stuff and actually saving the heads. And that biologist that I was talking about, he was coming by and getting them, and they were actually testing them for CWD. And so far hadn't had a case. I'm not one of those conspiracy theorists when it comes to CWD, but my personal opinion, I think EHD is a lot more detrimental to the deer herd than CWD is, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think it's probably fair to assume at this point that it's there. It's been there. Yep. It's always going to be there to a certain extent. And not every case of it is the introduction of a pandemic. You know, it's there. It's probably always been there to a certain extent, and it's just there's more media about it. There's more awareness of it. Hyper awareness is the better way to put it. And so every case gets brought out, kind of in the same way COVID is working. every time it happens, it gets sensationalized because we're all afraid of a pandemic sort of breakout, but I think it's just kind of something that our deer live with.
It's been around a long time. You can quote me on this and look it up yourselves, but I think the first reported case of CWD was in 1967. in Colorado. It was a high-fenced mule deer facility, I believe, somewhere in Colorado. I don't remember exactly where, but I kind of educated myself on that 2 or 3 years ago. The Meat Eater had a really good podcast on it. They had a really good biologist come on there and talk about it. And this is a little bit off subject, but this fall I went up mule deer hunting up in Colorado, and the guy I went with said that they've had CWD up there. They've had it up there for years, and he's been around it most of his life, and he kind of basically told me that, you know, yes, they get it, but it's not something that's going to just kill off the deer herd. I mean, he said he's even seen deer that, you know, while they're out there hunting, you can kind of tell the ones that may have it. And it seems like the real older deer, once they get, you know, past maturity or something, you'll see them kind of off by themselves away from the deer, and they're acting really strange and erratic. And they've killed a couple that have tested positive, but EHD wipes them out quick. CWD maybe, you know, it may take them a few years to die from it, from everything I've read. So,
well, I think I don't know. I don't have a big opinion about it other than.
No, just as long as we can deer hunt still, that's all.
Well, Levi, we've kept you more than an hour. We appreciate you coming on, talking with us about your holiday hunting and your rut, opinions about it and all that. Kyler, when are you going back to work?
Well, I worked today for a little bit. I went in for a couple hours, and I came back out to the woods, and then I'll probably be back in. I got an appointment at 9 a.m. on Monday morning, so that'll probably be it. Probably keep me back in the high gear. I work my butt off between January and September and October, and then I lull out in October, try to go put on autopilot for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Smart man.
Yeah. It's the way to do it. If you can do it, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Levi said he's trying to catch Omicron so he can go quarantine at the camp.
Yeah.
I did say that.
It's not a bad idea. It's well, considering the general reports about Omicron and what it actually does and how severe it is, it's probably a great idea.
Yeah.
All right, before we go, Kyler, you got to tell us a story about your more elaborate story about your zebra cake bribe you got on public land the other day. Is that really true, or are you making that up?
No, I just made that up. Have you never seen those videos?
This is the G-rated version of the video that's going around about the cookie.
Yeah, it's the G-rated version of the video. It's the video of the guy where it's like,
$20 bill.
He offered me a six-pack of Heineken if I'd show him my dick. He's like, man, get out of here, you weirdo. And then he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm walking over that way. He's got a Heineken in his hand, right? Yeah.
Yes, I know. I saw more converted version of that. It's funny.
I've been packing zebra cakes this week for midday snacks, and I was like, man, let me make something funny out of this. It's a pretty slow morning in the stand way.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Well, guys, I'm getting on an airplane in the morning, and I'm going to the ATA show. So hopefully next week and in the coming weeks, I'll have all kind of interesting and information about new stuff in the archery industry. That's supposed to be what I'm going to find out.
That'll be fun, man.
So hopefully I can bring some breaking news on something new and exciting that's happening in the world of archery.
Yeah, go see what new crossbows are coming out. See if they have a triple
threat. Yeah, let me see what they got a new crossbow that shoots 850 feet per second.
That's
shit
pretty,
like
man.
That.
Yeah, that's really
semi-auto pump action crossbow. Something like that. Anyway, all right, you guys, enjoyed it. Thank you, Levi, again for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I will be back on Monday, hopefully, with a lot of exciting news about the archery industry, and hopefully Kyler will have some success on his last final days of his little rutcation, and he'll have another great story, something, another zebra cake story, something like that. We don't know. We're gonna fly by the seat of our pants. We'll figure it out. Either way, we're going to talk to you next week. Thank you guys for your support. Check us out at LouisianaBowhunter.com. Get you some gear. If you didn't get any for Christmas, go get you some. If you got a store or a shop somewhere around you that's not got Louisiana Bowhunter gear, give us a shout. We'll see if we can't get some in the store. And until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. If you have anybody you'd like to hear on the show, reach out to us at info@LouisianaBowhunter.com. And if you want to help support Louisiana Bowhunter, go by your local archery shop and pick up some merchandise. If you don't have any at your local shop, let us know and we'll reach out to them. Or pick up your gear at LouisianaBowhunter.com and we'll ship it out to you same day. See you next week.